This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We expect a lot from teenagers. We want them to do well in school, to give back to the community, to participate in extracurricular activities. We ask them to act responsibly, to make good choices, and to think about their future. We're looking for adult behavior from people who are forced to live under our rules. Their friends are looking for something different sometimes. Peer pressure can lead to bad decisions. Sometimes it is all too much. The World Health Organization says depression's the most common cause of illness and disability for teens between 10 and 19 years old, and suicide's the third most common cause of death in adolescents, just behind traffic accidents. The problem is we often don't see it coming. We're good at providing help to those who might seem most in need, but we miss the teens who are behaving the way we expect. You know, decent grades, friends, not outwardly sad. We miss a lot of what goes on below the surface, and let's face it, teens don't always want to tell adults what's going on. We think they're feeling like we minimize their problems. We don't always take them seriously, sometimes just too busy to help out. So today we're going to talk to teens about what it's like to be a teenager today. You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. You can comment on our website, WNPR.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, Where We Live. Does your teen feel a lot of pressure? Do they tell you what is on their mind? Our jumping off point is a new book coming out early next month called When Reason Breaks. It's by former Hartford Current reporter Cindy Rodriguez, who left journalism to be a full-time teacher. A lot of what she's learned about the pressures faced by teens today makes it into this story. Cindy Rodriguez, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the book. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about what got you to the point where you wanted to write When Reason Breaks.
Sure. As you said, I've been a teacher now for 15 years, and I've seen a lot of the problems that students are facing. And as you said, it's not always academic issues. It's a combination of academic pressures, family pressures, pressures from their friends and their peer groups. And as a teacher, I've also seen adults who have extended themselves beyond the classroom. So they're with them, you know, in their 42 minutes teaching them their subject. But they also go beyond that. And so in my book, I do have positive person, Ms. Diaz, who's an English teacher. And for me, that was really important to include her, because I think in young adult fiction, too often adults are absent entirely or part of the problem. But my experience has been that there are plenty of adults in the public school system who really do want to help and who have extended themselves beyond their professional role as teacher or counselor or principal. They get involved with the student on an academic level as well as a personal level.
But that's a tricky, and you would know better than I would as a teacher, that's a really tricky balance for Ms. Diaz, your teacher in the book, but for you and any other teacher. Can you talk a bit about striking that balance, about getting involved in teens' lives and looking for things that might be causing problems, but not overstepping the bounds of parent or friend or all those things that you have to worry about?
True. And teachers go through a brief training about, you know, warning signs in terms of teen depression and possible suicide attempts. So we are trained to that level, but we also have people in the building who are true professionals regarding those issues, you know, our counselors, our social workers, our school psychologists. So as a teacher, I know my limitations. I know what I can do and what I really then would need help with. So if a student comes to me, you know, they start coming at lunchtime or they just want to hang out, especially when I taught at Hall High School for 3 years, that happened quite a bit. You know, students didn't want to hang out in the cafeteria. There were things going on that they just didn't want to face. So part of it was just being open, having my door open, literally, and allowing students to come in and talk when they needed to. When it got to a point, or if it got to a point where I felt this is too much for me to handle alone or just to be able to give them some general advice, I absolutely would pick up the phone and ask to speak to a counselor or a social worker and say, you know, this is the situation. And students also knew that there may come that point. I think students who do start to open up know that if they say certain things, if they do threaten to harm themselves, or if they feel, if they reveal those emotions, that we do have to respond. So it is a delicate balance, because they are coming to you as opposed to a parent. I realize I'm not their parent, but in the moment, they trust me, and I really can't turn my back on that.
It's just, you can't betray that trust, but often what a teacher is expected to do is very different than what a parent might be expected to do, very different from what a friend, a peer might be expected to do. And that sometimes, I would assume, puts the Ms. Diaz's of the world in a difficult position.
It can be a difficult position, but I think, at least I've always felt that I am able to draw those lines. And I think, you know, maybe some teachers can't, or maybe they feel they get too personally involved. But I do kind of draw that line. I realize when I'm in over my head, or that I say to them, this is really a conversation. You know, are you having this conversation at home as well? Do you need to speak to a counselor? You know, I always sort of offer that if I feel it's something beyond what I can help them with. But if they're coming in to talk about general pressures at school, general peer issues, I feel like I'm qualified to sort of deal with that.
Tell me about some of the issues that your main characters, Emily and Elizabeth, face throughout the course of this book. And people who haven't read the book but know those names will note that Emily Dickinson, the great poet, is a through line in this book.
Yes.
For you. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, about Emily Dickinson's role in this, but also how these various stories and these things that you've experienced kids going through are woven into the tale of this book.
Sure. Well, Emily, as you said, Emily Dickinson is a theme throughout the story. And her full name is Emily Elizabeth Dickinson. One character is Emily Delgado. The other is Elizabeth Davis. So in some ways, they both represent the poet. She was very smart and brilliant, but also suffered through depression. So when I was taking a class based on her life and her poetry, I thought to myself, you know, is there a way to sort of portray her in modern teenagers? And I decided to split her into two people. And Emily is similar to someone like you had mentioned in your introduction. From the outside, she appears to have a very perfectly normal life, not much to complain about. She has a family, friends, a boyfriend. She does well in school. She doesn't get into trouble. But internally, she is struggling mightily with the pressures that she feels from home and school and socially. And even people closest to her do not recognize that she is indeed depressed, and that depression worsens as the story continues. And then on the other hand, we have Elizabeth, who sort of wears her frustrations on the outside. She's still reeling from a situation where her father has cheated on her mother and has left the family, and she's very angry and has severe trust issues, but she shows it. She's aggressive and she's impulsive, and she acts out in school and gets into trouble. So that kind of student, as a teacher, I know that type of student will get attention. She will get some intervention, because if you're swearing at a teacher and punching lockers, as she does in the story, you're going to end up in someone's office and you're going to have to talk about it. You may not reveal everything, but you are getting that intervention because of your actions. But we also have students like Emily who can be just as distressed. But when you ask them, is everything okay? Their answer is going to be, I'm fine. And you know that they're not. But they're not outwardly showing any sign that you can really then sort of run with, that you can say, okay, there's the opening. Let me try to get in there and see if she'll talk, or see if I can get her to talk to someone else. So it was important for me to show those two types of students, because I think sometimes the Emilies get overlooked, and those types of situations can end up in tragedy.
These are some of the characters from a new book called When Reason Breaks. It's by Cindy Rodriguez. It's a story that has gotten us talking and thinking a little bit about some of the pressures that teenagers face today. And we wanted to welcome in some teens from the Journalism and Media Academy Magnet School, which is right here at CPBN, Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network, right above us here at WNPR. And we've been happy to work with some JMA students in the past. We want to welcome in Shamoya Hansen and Vikwan Herring, who are both here with us. Shamoya and Vikwan, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So first of all, but before we get into a little bit of your story, I guess I'm wondering if anything that you just heard Cindy talk about some of the pressures that she sees as a teacher that happen every day in high school hallways, if these are some of the things that resonate with you, some things that you notice.
I mean, yeah, all the time. Whenever when she said kids generally drift away from adults, they're like, yeah, I'm fine. But you know inside it's not okay. I would think that they wouldn't feel comfortable enough opening up to an adult as opposed to someone who they feel understands them more, which would be a peer. But sometimes it's just they don't feel comfortable enough, and adults don't really get that. So maybe it has happened before where they have been shut down, or an adult has said, you know what, you'll be fine, you'll get over it, that they're just like, I'm just going to stick to myself. And that can be deadly.
Yeah. What do you say, Vikwan?
I agree with her. Most times, like she said, there's the Elizabeths that perform, you know, do a bunch of crazy things where they're more noticeable. And you can easily just notice them and say, okay, something's wrong, let's intervene. But the Emilies are probably even more destructive because they hold all their anger inside and they don't say anything. And they can not only be disregarded but overlooked. And you would walk up to her and approach her and ask her, like she said, is anything wrong? And they would, you know, they would say, oh, well, I'm fine, when truly they're not and there's something wrong.
Well, maybe you can talk to us a little bit about it, because one of the things we wanted to get to is we, even when we have conversations on our program about education, we think as adults we know an awful lot about what kids are facing in school. But we don't know. I mean, we just don't. We think we do, but we don't. Shamoy, I'll ask you first, and Vaquan, I'd like you to jump in. I mean, what are some of the big pressures you face that maybe your teachers, your parents, that nobody really understands?
Like us?
Yeah, you.
Senior year, starting the first semester was killer. Honestly, all the stuff that was just thrown at us, not even, you know, it's just... college is a huge thing. School is a huge thing. Then you have family, things going on at home. It's a lot to take on at one time. So it does become frustrating, but I've gotten over it. It was one of the worst, the worst moments, like the worst time period so far that I've had to.
And you're just in the middle of your senior year now, right?
Yeah.
So at the start of the senior year, it was really, really difficult. And this whole pressure to go to college, I mean, this is important. We hear from everybody, right? Whether it's your parents, your teachers, you hear President Obama say every single American should go to college. And right, you're one of these people who's trying to get into college. And I can only imagine that you're probably thinking, well, that's easy for them to say, but this is a really hard thing, right?
Yeah, there's different times. I've seen this post before where it said, back in the day, all you had to do was basically get good grades to go to college, but now you have to speak 6 languages, you have to be able to swim and all that stuff. And there's so many requirements nowadays, but I mean, we'll get through it. We've gotten through it, and it's a stressful thing.
Vaquan, how about you? What are some of the pressures that you face? Some of the same things, maybe different things?
I agree with her. The pressure to get to college is probably one of the greatest things that go on when as a senior in high school. And just as a teen altogether, it's such a transitional period in your life. Not only the transition from a child or you know, a youngling to a mature young adult to go to college, but not only that, but there's a transition to find out who you are as an individual. There's a lot of pressures to people, especially in high school, to tell you who you are. Not only just seniors, freshmen, you know, juniors, everybody that's a teen really goes through a lot of pressures where you're in a transitional period and you don't know who you are. You really do not know who you are as an individual because people tell you, oh, you should act this way, you should dress this way, you should talk this way. And some people probably don't want to talk that way. Some people feel like they should be who they are. Some people feel like it's easier to fall into the categories, per se, that are socially, you know, put in place and set in place so that you can be, you know, generalized as, say, a you know, a nerd or you know, a cool kid or, you know, just,
well,
you know what I mean?
And one of the things I think that's so interesting about that, though, is this – it's something I mentioned in the introduction that I always think adults don't get is we want you to act like an adult. We want you to start to learn how to understand who you are and be an adult. But we set all the rules, right? You got to dress a certain way when you go to school. You got to act a certain way. You have to follow certain rules. And that it's got to set up a little bit of a struggle for you guys in trying to figure out how to do both those things, right?
Yes, it's very conflicting. It's very conflicting.
Yeah, discipline is very important, but it is conflicting.
Yes.
I want to quickly bring in Deborah Dean Ciriani, who's a marriage and family therapist at Bridge Family Center, who's joining us for this conversation. And Deborah, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you very much.
I'm wondering if you could just
to be here.
Well, maybe pick up a little bit on what we've heard from the students so far. I mean, we're using Cindy's book as a jumping off point to sort of talk about the pressures the teenagers face, the pressures that we just don't really talk about very much in society. And we just take it as a for granted that they're going to figure out some way to deal with it. What are some of the things you're hearing here?
For one thing, I have to say these two young students are very articulate and very smart, and they have a good insight into the pressures. I mean, much more so than I do. I'm not a student anymore. And also, I'm from a different generation, and this generation is so immersed in social media, of course, we're always talking about. There's so much pressure. It's not just the college thing. There's so many other pressures there. You know, the cost of going to college, parental pressure, this year, senior year, taking the SATs, doing all these things. What I hear coming into my office, I have many young students, almost the age of you two here, and the quiet ones are the ones that I worry about. When they're demonstrative and outside the box, then I don't worry so much. But the quiet ones, they come in, and it can take a long time to open them up. They have lost their leadership, self-empowerment, and it may go back a very long time. To help them to take a path where they let all the external things fall to the side, finances, family dynamics, dysfunction within the family, being unhappy with the way you look. A lot of that comes through the door, too. Mm. To help them to push those things to the side so they can get back to who they are. You know, Cindy was saying, you know, 7th and 8th grade, we were speaking before the show, very tough time, very tough time. Kids are trying to fit in.
Well, trying to fit in, and that's what you're doing right now, a reading specialist at a middle school.
Right.
7th and 8th grade, I mean, these guys are seniors. They've made it through some of the really difficult stuff.
Yeah.
And, yes, life is still difficult, and being an adult is hard, but, boy, middle school, early high school?
Yeah, it's all of these pressures that they've talked about, it starts, I feel, in the middle school. There's a significant change, I feel, from 6th to 7th. I've taught 6th, 7th, and 8th. And there's a huge difference just in each of those years. A 6th grader versus a 7th grader versus an 8th grader is very significantly different in terms of where they're at. And many parents have come to conferences at the 7th grade year and said, I don't know what happened. She or he was so sweet last year.
Where's my princess?
And so some of it's natural. It's developmentally appropriate for a child to be changing, right? They're changing physically and emotionally. But for students who are also experiencing a lot of pressure, I think it does even start then. I think more and more we're talking about the expectations for college, even younger. I think some of the academic expectations have really increased. So even at a younger age, I had a 6th grader the other day ask me, you know, he's looked very distraught. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, I think I'm going to get a C in whatever class it was. Is C passing? And I said, yeah, C's passing. But in our minds, it's like if you're not an A-B student, you're a failure.
Let's think. C's passing, but if you're trying to get into UConn,
right?
It may be passing, Shamoy, but it's gonna inflict a kind of pressure on you. I have to just ask you before we take a break, though. As adults, here's another thing that we don't understand. 4 years ago, I was basically the same guy I am now, right? I've learned some things. I'm better at some things, worse at some things, but I'm basically the same person. 4 or 5 years ago, you guys were in middle school. Do you feel like you've grown and you've changed and things are a lot different for you in your life than they were 4 or 5 years ago?
I mean, I had no choice but to. It was everything was going so fast. In middle school, I was a lot more relaxed. Towards my 8th grade year, I was like, okay, now I'm going to high school. You got to grow up now. As a freshman, I felt like I was in 6th grade again. And then now as a senior, I feel like I need to get everything together. There's a lot of pressure now that I'm a senior. I know that now I'm going to be out of school, but, you know, into college, all that stuff. But I'm out of high school, so it's time to be an adult.
What do you say?
I agree with Shamoya. There's a large transition between middle school and high school because of the fact that you're around different people. You're around more mature people. Your age group is more, you know, it's a larger age group. So you're not only around, you know, people your age, but you're around people older than you, people that are seniors, of course, and older than you. And it's really just, you know, it's the diversity that expands. You expand your diversity. You see different things. You see other people's perception of how you should act and how things are and how things work in the world. And some people, they consume that knowledge. Some people consume that knowledge and they grow off of it. They see maybe this person might not see things the same way I see things, and that's okay. Or some people learn from those ways. Oh, I never thought of things that way.
But it almost sounds like you're saying you can model different behaviors too. I mean, in a wide group of people in a high school, you've got people who are acting very immature, acting like 6th graders still. And you've got people who are acting like, I'm ready to not just get out of high school, but go to work, not just go to college. I'm ready to be an adult now. So that's got to be an influence too. You're dealing with people who are at all different stages of development,
yes.
Right? Yeah, I'll bet. Deborah, I know you want to have a quick thought before we take a break.
Yeah, I wanted to. I know one of the focuses we have here today is to help educators, parents, friends know what to do when you have problems like this. I think that what I see coming to me, and I think we do at the Bridge in general, is that families, friends, so forth, often are addressing the behavior. They're not addressing the feelings. Mm-hmm. You have a child who is screaming. You have a child who's throwing things, punching holes in walls, and so forth. Instead of directing your comments to the behavior, if you can just sit with it and embrace the feelings, because underneath that anger, there's something going on. And then that's how we can start to take the layers off the onion, as I call it. That's something that parents need to start doing very, very early, immediately, addressing feelings, not just behavior. Don't do that. Don't do that. Instead of saying, I see you're upset. What can I do? Let me help you out here.
When we come back, we're going to hopefully get some calls from some parents at 860-275-7266. We're talking with Deborah Dean Ciriani, who's a marriage and family therapist at the Bridge Family Center. Cindy Rodriguez has a new book that got us thinking about the pressures teens face. It's called When Reason Breaks. And we're also joined by two students from the Journalism and Media Academy Magnet School, Shamoya Hansen and Vikwan Herring. We're going to take your phone calls as well at 860-275-7266. You can tweet us at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about the high expectations and pressures that teens are feeling these days. They feel a lot of these pressures. They don't always share their feelings with the adults around them. Instead, they're telling friends or they're keeping it inside. And it's causing, of course, problems with depression and more. It's part of what is talked about in the book called When Reason Breaks. It's a new young adult novel by Cindy Rodriguez. She's a former Hartford Current reporter who 15 years ago turned to teaching, and she's learned an awful lot about the pressures the teens face. That's the subject of her book. We're using this to talk with teens today, including Shamoya Hansen and Vikwan Herring, who are both from the Journalism and Media Academy Magnet School here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting in the Hartford Public Schools. Also, Deborah Dean Ciriani is here from the Bridge Family Center. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. We'll get to some of your calls in just a moment. We want to welcome in Olivia Smith, who's another student to join our conversation. Olivia's at Classical Magnet School, not just down the road from us here in Hartford. Olivia, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, I know that you've been listening into some of this conversation. A lot of it's about, you know, where you go and who you talk to. If there's a problem in your life, something you want to talk about, who do you talk to, Olivia?
I generally talk to my friends or my mother.
Yeah. And does your mom, do you think, understand some of the issues that you have, that you face as a teenager today?
She understands some of it, but she's going to be a little bit upset for me for saying this, but there are some things that I cannot talk to her about.
Yeah, and that's obvious, right? A lot of us can't. I mean, there's probably things I can't talk to my mom about to this day. But look, give me a sense, and I've asked our other students here today about some of the pressures that you face as a student, as a teenager, that maybe we don't see, your mom doesn't see, your teachers don't see.
I'm definitely pressured to keep pretty high grades. My parents have really high standards, as well as the teachers over here at Classical. But it's also the expectations to still be able to maintain kind of like a social life and have a good standing with my friends at the same time.
When you say a social life, that's another thing that maybe we don't understand as well as we possibly could. Those pressures of a social life, Olivia, are something that I think a lot of adults probably say, oh, they'll get over it, or it's a teenage crush, or it's something that's not that important. But for you, for your peers, it is important, right? More important than we probably understand.
I'd say that my friends are very important to me. So when I'm going to do homework instead of hanging out with them, it's a little bit saddening, but you got to get it done.
I'm wondering, Shamoya and Vikwan, do you have any thoughts about social pressures as well, especially we mentioned earlier social media? I mean, things are a little bit different when it comes to the way in which we have relationships today than when I was in school, because social media allows you to just interface with people a lot differently. Do you have thoughts about the pressures that are put on by social media, Vikwan?
Social media has affected the way people act in a large way. Let's see. teens our age realize that the actions that they do and things that they do can be easily documented and posted online for everyone to see. So it kind of makes them, they can't act the way they want to act because they're afraid that they'll be judged by a large group of people they don't know, people that they don't want to associate with. And it's really pressuring.
Yeah. Do you have some thoughts on this, Shamoya?
Yeah. I've noticed nowadays I'd rather stay inside than go outside with my friends. I'll just maybe text them or kick them or or I'll just inbox them on Facebook rather than actually leave the house. So it is kind of, now that I think about it, it's kind of strange.
And for those who don't understand, she's not actually literally kicking them.
No.
This is,
no.
Yes.
It's an application.
It's an application the kids use to talk back and forth with other Cindy.
Yeah, I was going to jump in on that because I really almost feel sorry for teens today in the sense that, and I've said this to some of my students, that nothing they do can be private. She has to stay in instead of go out. You know, and if you're in a high school, in a big high school, you know, who you talk to, if you're holding someone's hand, you know, all those things that used to be sort of like these sort of precious private moments when I was a teenager, you know, passing notes and like there were these things that you experienced. It wasn't the world experiencing it with you. Can now be, you know, someone takes a photo, they text it to their friends, they put it on Twitter, people are commenting, as you said, people you don't even know.
It
suddenly
can be.
Have an opinion about your life.
But it's not just like the world is looking at you. In part, what social media has done is it's created a culture in which we want to have relationships with large groups of people at the same time. We want to show people who we're holding hands with or who we're talking with. And that's, I think, part of it as well. That's changed a lot of dynamics.
Right. Sometimes we put it out there, true. And then other times you're not putting it out there, but somebody else is putting it out there for you. And you're going to be the recipient of the criticism or the comments. And so when you do have that first love or you do have that first breakup, the pain that you might have felt privately, you know, where you could just share it with your friends – you know, have a good cry, and we all done that, and people need to do that, suddenly becomes a public event. And so I can't even imagine how that feels to have the things that were, that used to just be held close, now sort of open for public scrutiny. Mm. I think that just adds a whole nother layer of complexity to what teens are going through today.
Yeah, if I can say, there's nothing more difficult for kids than this pressure from the outside. And what you said, Shaquana, is what you do is stay home. Isolation is the biggest dream killer in the world for kids. Mm. You go home, you lock yourself in your room, and you start to put all your thoughts in your head. And if there's a kid who's leaning toward depression, that's the worst thing you can possibly do.
I'm not trying
to criticize you at all. I have kids who go home on a Friday and don't come back out until Monday morning when they go to school. Mm. They're spending 15, 30 hours in video games, Xbox, whatever it is, watching movies, and that's where their world is. No real interaction. And so when kids come to me who are locked in, that's the first place I go. You got
to
get out.
I want to go back to Olivia Smith, who's a student at Classical Magnet, who's on the phone with us. Does that sound like you or any of your friends, Olivia? I mean, spending a little less time out in the world, a little bit more time isolated, you know, looking at a screen?
Definitely. It reminds me of quite a few of my friends and my sibling, actually. Although I like going outside sometimes, so I'm not generally in that circle.
I want to go to a quick phone call. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Linda is calling from Winston. Hi there, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a couple comments. You know, I really don't see any major difference in how things are today for young people versus how they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, there certainly are different technologies and changes that have come about over time. But no matter what generation you look at, no matter what school year you were talking about, you know, there's always been issues surrounding all these topics that you're discussing.
Yes.
And, you know, what I see is, you know, the you know, social media aspect of the whole thing, that's not interacting. That's not interacting. Interacting is when you look at someone's face and you read what their face and you learn how to interpret body language and skills of that nature. I know people that all they do is text, and
well,
then they try talking
yeah.
to me.
Well,
and I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, Linda, first of all, thank you very much for the phone call. And I guess, you know, I hear what you're saying about, you know, we've all faced these problems and you face the problems and I face the problems, you know, 30 years ago. But it seems to me like just the last thing she said there, the fact that you can text all day and that's something I couldn't do, that does sound to me, I don't know, does it sound like that's something that's different between the social media you guys have to deal with and the fact that you have pressures to go to college that honestly a lot of us didn't have. There were a lot more choices. You got out of high school and you can go get a job 30 years ago. It's really hard to do that now. I mean, what do you think about that? Are things basically still the same or have they really changed?
I mean, yeah, what she said about things being there are always problems. I mean, I don't know what went on. No, because yeah, but now there are problems like there were back then, but there's a lot of distractions as well, yeah. Social media being the main one. And me personally, I stay inside because I feel more comfortable by myself, and I feel like it's easier to just lock myself away, I suppose, and just use my phone, just go at it.
And I think, and what you're saying is exactly right. That's one way in which social isolation happens, right? You actually have an outlet to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go outside, Vaquan. You can stay inside and actually interact with your friends, and that is different. What our caller Linda was just saying, that means maybe not reading body language, seeing people face to face. You're talking to them over your phone,
and it's not bad.
Yeah. Well, it's not bad. It's just different. I want to move to something else very quickly before we take our next break. And Olivia, while we have you on the phone, and we appreciate your phone call as well, one of the themes in the book When Reason Breaks by Cindy Rodriguez that got us talking about some of the pressures the teens faces about attempted suicide, about depression. Olivia, do you have experience with any of your friends, people who you know who've attempted to suicide or tried to hurt themselves?
Yeah, I do, unfortunately.
What can you tell us about that and how it affected you, how it affected your peer group, what you think about that as part of the unfortunate outlet that some teens have?
It was kind of an earth-shattering experience, especially because the friends that I do have that have either self-harmed or tried to commit suicide were one of the more outgoing kind of people in our group. So it was really, we didn't see it coming, and we didn't know that anything was going on because they didn't necessarily tell us what was going on with them. And I think having social media should have made that easier, but at the same time, it's easier to mask your emotions, like Linda said, which kind of made it a little bit more difficult to navigate emotions.
Speaking of emotions, Olivia, I mean, do you find yourself feeling sad and just not having anybody to talk to?
Sometimes I like to tell people what I'm thinking so I don't end up in a rut. But there are times where I do feel a little bit overwhelmed by all by school and by other drama with friends or a situation in my family.
Cindy, what do you think schools might be able to do better to deal with some of these issues? Because some of the things we're talking about seem like they're, you know, surface things having to do with, you know, social pressures, and some of them are very, very serious, like depression or sadness. I mean, how do you think school could react better to some of these things?
Well, my experience in West Hartford, I feel like in the cases that I've known about, I think the schools do respond when they realize something is wrong. I'm sure there are some students who have felt neglected, like you said, overlooked. But when the case is clear, I have seen people sort of jump into action. I do think it's hard when you only see a child for 42 minutes a day, especially early in the year, to really know them and to see that there is an issue. Schools have started things like warning advisory programs. We've got lots of intramurals and sports. I do think getting kids involved or having students involved in anything helps because it connects them to other people, to other adults, and to other peers. And I also think that students over the years have been not necessarily trained, but they've gotten the message that we know they may be uncomfortable talking to adults. And so we're encouraging them to report a friend in need if that friend can't do it themselves. And it's a very difficult thing to do, especially if you go to a friend, you know, that you feel comfortable with, that you trust, and you're telling them the truth of how you feel, to know that that person may then go tell an adult, which is what they didn't want in the first place. But I've seen over the years, more and more students are reporting, which is great on the one hand, because the person who doesn't feel like they can do it themselves are they have an ally, they have somebody who's their age group who's saying, my friend needs help and I don't know how to help her or him. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we're not necessarily increasing the professional staff who are trained to really deal with crisis. So the number of guidance counselors and social workers and psychologists in a building really are on the lower side, in my opinion.
You can report all you want, but if you don't have people to actually take in that information to play that next role.
Exactly. So I think that in the long term, if schools are looking at ways of, you know, how can we help students more in the social emotional area, you know, my humble opinion is that we would have to invest more money in hiring counselors, social workers, and psychologists who, when that the alarm bells go off, whether it's coming from a student reporting a friend or a teacher who's heard something that's going on, they do need to have more than one person in the building to go to who can then take it to that next level of intervention.
Because I think it's fair to say, Deborah, that the worst thing that could possibly happen to a student or a friend of a student who reports depression or some sort of behavior problem is that they go through this traumatic thing and then nothing happens. Then nobody mm-hmm. helps. Yeah. If no one's there to actually help, mm-hmm. well, then you've learned a completely different lesson.
You know, case in point, just recently I had someone in my office, a high school student, and came to me and said, I have a friend that I feel is at risk. They are telling me things, they're texting me things that are making me feel worried. What do I do? And I said, you need to tell someone. She told someone at the school. She told somebody, another friend, who also together they went and told somebody at the school. It made all the difference. This young person was very angry that she had been reported, but that relationship quickly healed, actually. She was appreciative because she was definitely at risk. So I think there is a more leaning toward reporting these things on students. They see now. There's so much discussion at the schools about depression and so forth. I mean, an incredible play was just done at Hall High School about depression, and very impactful. And so there's a lot of – they're hearing a lot more about it.
I want to go quickly to Megan, who's calling us. Megan, go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I work at the Institute of Living in a partial hospitalization program for adolescents with mental health issues. And I also have the privilege to be trained in youth mental health first aid, which really goes along with what we're talking about in regards to what schools can do and what community can do to open up those conversations, to notice what's going on with young people, and to recognize what may be going beyond typical adolescent development issues and more towards a problem, an issue, maybe a developing mental illness or safety mm-hmm. concerns. Mm-hmm. The schools that I have trained administrators, teachers, support staff in just feel almost a sense of relief once they're provided with this action plan. And that's really, you know, what we give them through youth mental health first aid is a plan to what to do if they notice something different mm-hmm. about a student. Mm-hmm. And the resources available within the community. You know, this has been such an amazing development that a couple area agencies have engaged in order for early intervention and prevention of suicide.
I'll just ask you quickly, Megan, could you let us know if people wanted to get in touch with that information, where would they go?
The Institute of Living. They could either go to the website, and I believe it's through the Family Resource Center, but you'd be looking to contact Patricia Graham. She manages all of the organization, the scheduling of classes.
I apologize just because we're up against the break. What I'll do is we'll make sure that on our website, WNPR.org, we'll put some of these resources up there for people to link through to. I'm really glad that you called us, Megan. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by another student who will join our conversation about teenagers, some of the pressures they face. I want to thank Olivia Smith, who's a student at Classical Magnet School. Olivia, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You can call us as well, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, Trinity College in Hartford has a new president. We will spend an hour with Joanne Berger-Sweeney talking about her school's role in revitalizing the capital city while educating students from all over the world. We will explore higher education today, and we'll take some of your questions. That's coming up on Monday's Where We Live. Today we're talking about teens and two teenagers trying to better understand the pressures they face from school, from parents, from relationships. Adults often complain about bad behavior from teenagers, but it's often their way of talking to us when they can't tell us in other ways. Our jumping-off point today is a new book coming out early next month called When Reason Breaks. It's by former Hartford Current reporter Cindy Rodriguez, who left journalism to become a full-time teacher about 15 years ago, and a lot of what she's learned is in this novel. You can join us, 860-275-7266. We're also joined by Deborah Dean Ciriani from the Burge Family Center and two students from the Journalism and Media Academy Magnet School here in Hartford, right in our building, Shamoya Hansen and Vaquan Herring. We want to go to Corinne King, who is a student at Farmington High School. And Corinne, first of all, thank you so much for calling us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. It's nice to talk to you.
And I know that you have a story about a friend dealing with some very difficult issues. I wanted to give you a moment to just sort of tell us that story.
My best friend, Catherine, died in November of 2013. She had been at treatment for bulimia for about 4 weeks, I think. And even though she had technically gained enough weight, all the doctors and even she was saying that they didn't think she was ready to go home. But insurance-wise, she had qualified to go home. So insurance said that they weren't going to pay for her treatment anymore and sent her home. And a week after she got home, she passed away in her sleep after her heart gave out.
I'm so sorry to hear that story, first of all. What can you tell me about some of the conversation we're having so far, Corinne, about what maybe adults, others might have been able to help with, what they might have been able to know if there was some way to get across the messages of what she was going through?
Teenagers, I think, I even know myself, don't always tell how we're feeling. We'll say that we're fine if someone asks. But I think definitely there are things that have changed in her personality and the way she acted before she went to treatment. And it was kind of easy for me and my friends to pick up on it because we had other paths with mental illnesses that made us more prone to picking up on it. And I think parents-wise, when your kids aren't really going out and being social anymore, or if the grades are suffering, I think that's probably the first sign of things changing.
Have you suffered from depression at all yourself, Corinne? I mean, have you faced some of, in your own mind, some of the same problems your friend did?
I did, actually. I was reported by, I found out now, it's one of my best friends reported me for being suicidal about a month after Catherine died. And I wasn't at not because, the pain wasn't there, but instead because I couldn't come to the terms with my mom finding me lifeless. But I definitely felt, isolated after she died, especially since she wasn't from my hometown, and so none of my friends here really understood what was happening and other issues. So I definitely, went through a stage of depression.
And you, I would assume, feel some of the same pressures our other students have been talking about, these pressures of school and family and that sort of thing as well, right?
Yes, I think definitely the school aspect mostly.
Really, just about grades?
Yeah, I think grades nowadays, pretty much your high school grades determine your future, and it doesn't always seem that way, but when they determine what college you go to and college determines what kind of job you get, I think grades nowadays have a major role on your future life.
I want to get to a quick phone call here. Ali is calling from Long Island. Hi there. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. Thank you for bringing such an important topic. I'm not sure if this was discussed, but I'm just curious how the students or the teens, part of the minorities or immigrants who are Muslim, dealing with the situation now that we are all seeing, and I could imagine what a horrible situation to go to school and maybe pressured or isolated. Is there any experience that these teenagers could tell us? Secondly, what can I do as a family member, friends? Is there a book I could recommend? Because I know a specific case where the student feels isolated, doesn't want to go to school, and it's a very difficult situation. Need the comments and if there's any help.
Well, first of all, Ali, thank you very much for raising that. I don't know, Deborah, if you have a quick thought, just because we're a little low on time.
Yeah, I would say that it's very important when a family is dealing with a child who's feeling isolated to seek as much help as you can. I deal with a very, very broad spectrum of people, different populations, diverse populations, and I can really empathize with how you're feeling. It's important for the parents to be willing to have their children seek help from either educators or from a professional, a clinician, in groups, either through your religious affiliations. Find a way for these kids to have a place to share, especially in a group environment. I think group environment is very good when we have these issues, not just individual.
I wanted to ask our students here very quickly, because I know, you know, when we had students from JMA on the program before, you know, we had two young men who were from Jamaica and a young woman who's from Nepal. And I know that your school and in Hartford Public Schools, there are kids from all sorts of different family backgrounds. There are kids who grew up not speaking English, a lot of Spanish speakers. And you're faced with a lot of different issues. That's another thing I think we don't understand is the fact that everyone has these very individual issues, right, Fiquan, that we don't really get, and maybe the schools aren't equipped to deal with too.
I agree with you. And I think that the best thing to do in a situation where a child is feeling isolated is to, you say, people of different backgrounds, find some people who may relate to you better, people that understand you better, people that you can talk to if you have a problem. And it's important for them to engage in extracurricular activities, something that, you know, to ease their mind, make them more, you know, communicative and to want to talk to other people so that they'll share this information. If there's anything wrong, they'll tell someone and they can help, you know, guide them through their problems, learn how to deal with what it is that, you know, they're dealing with.
Yeah, and I know it's something, Cindy, we just have a few seconds left, but something that you've written and talked about a lot, too, is even having mentors, Latina mentors in a school for young Spanish-speaking women is an incredibly important thing. But that can only go so far. Sometimes you're just seeking out people who can help from any background.
Right. I would mention, because the last caller brought up the a cultural issue, that Latinas are at greater risk of attempting suicide, young, between the ages of 15 and 24. So there is definitely a cultural, some immigrant issues that you have to deal with in addition to all of the other issues. But you're right, I think getting involved, as the students were saying, being connected in some way. And, you know, as an adult in working in a school with children, I just would encourage other adults to be that person who leaves their door open and is willing to be there in case somebody does need to come and talk to you. But to also push them in those directions, you know, well, we have intramurals, we have sports, we have this, you know, what are your interests, to try to get them connected, because I think it is crucially important for them to feel that they belong somewhere.
Yeah, if I can just add one small thing.
And I'm sorry, yes. We have to go just because we've run out of time. And I want to make sure I thank everyone, including, first of all, Cindy Rodriguez, whose book, When Reason Breaks, comes out early next month. Thank you so much for starting this conversation.
Thank
and congratulations
you
on your book.
Thank
I really
you
appreciate
much.
It.
Wow. Thank you.
And thanks to Deborah Dean Sirianni, who's a marriage and family therapist at the Bridge Family Center. Thank you so
You're
much,
welcome.
Deborah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Shamoya Hansen and Vaquan Herring, who are both students at the Journalism and Media Academy Magnet School in Hartford. You guys are great. And congratulations
thank
on
you.
Your senior year and good
thank
luck
you.
Next year. And thank you so much to Corrine King, who's a student at Farmington High School. Thank you, Corrine, for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
You can continue this conversation at WNPR.org. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.